Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to Golf Talk Live. I'm your host, Ted Oderico, and I want to welcome to another episode, July 18th, 2013. And tonight, I'm actually doing the program live from the Riverwalk area in San Antonio, Texas, as opposed to normally where I base it out of in Panama City Beach, Florida. So I'm actually on vacation this week, and I was just talking to our guest this evening, Steve Pratt, who I'm going to bring on in just a moment or two. But just a couple of quick announcements. I was actually on vacation this week and decided to continue with the program anyhow instead of canceling it out. And I'm actually kind of glad I did. I've been having a great time here in the Riverwalk area here in San Antonio. If you've never been here before, it's actually kind of a very interesting place, obviously a very Hispanic theme in San Antonio, but the Riverwalk area is quite an interesting thing to see. So if you've never been here, certainly you need to come out here and check it out. It's quite interesting. But anyways, as I mentioned, just before I bring out Steve, I'm just going to mention to you very quickly, we're winding down our July programs. July 25th will be obviously the last one of the month, as we air live every Thursday at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. And next Thursday is going to be a guest I'm also looking forward to having on is Randy Friedman. Now, she is a speaker and mind coach and also golf pro at Golf Mind Power LLC, and also the author of a book that she published out in 2008 called Your Inner Swing. And I'm really looking forward to speaking with her next week, as we're going to talk a little bit about the mental side of golf, which is also, obviously everybody wants to focus on the physical side, but there's really two sides to golf, the physical and also the mental side, which as many great players of both today and the past, Jack Nicklaus being one, talked about how important the mental side of golf really is. So just let me very quickly tell you a little bit, and then I'm going to bring him out here to talk to us. Just a little bit about Steve Pratt. He's obviously an instructor as myself, and he's currently teaching at Lake Lindero Country Club in I believe, Agoura Hills, California. Forgive me, Steve, if I'm not pronouncing that correct. He also graduated with a degree in kinesiology from Cal State University in Northridge in 1993, and also has a master's. Worked with the Mike Austin at the Studio City Golf Course in the summer of 93, and he's going to be talking a little bit about Mike Austin swing fundamentals when he comes out here. Also very, very familiar and familiar with the long drive aspect of the game, and also some of the benefits of using equipment such as TrackMan. So I'm going to bring him out here and let him tell a little bit more about what he does. So welcome to the show, Steve.
Hey, Ted. Thanks for having me on.
I appreciate it. Thank you for coming on, and I've been looking forward to it. I've been waiting very patiently for a few weeks to have you on. I'm kind of excited because everybody obviously wants to know how to hit the ball a lot further, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later in the second segment. But let's talk about first, just tell me a little bit more about yourself, just so the listeners here. I mean, obviously, I've got the information here, but you obviously know it a little bit better. Very prominent in the long drive end of golf. So just tell us a little bit more about yourself, Steve.
Yeah, sure. Well, I was, a struggling mini tour pro myself. Did hit the ball a long way, but maybe didn't have the complete game to make it out on tour. I got fairly close at one point. There's a lot of other skills out there besides being able to drive it long and straight. If it was just that, then I would have done really well. So I go back to teaching again, which is probably really what I was born to do, is
right.
To teach anyone. And so I'm very excited to teach. It's very rewarding, and very excited to be able to teach people the Mike Austin method of swinging, which people who are students of it and teach it believe it's the most efficient way to swing a golf club.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about that then. Sort of explain, as you referenced in some of the information that Steve had sent me prior leading up to the show here, talked about some of the fundamentals. Explain maybe some of the differences. First off, explain a little bit about the Mike Austin swing and maybe some of the differences to, compared to some of the more traditional aspects of and fundamentals of the swing.
Right, sure. You could probably describe the Austin swing as just a very precise classic swing. I would put the demarcation line between classic and modern swing at the introduction of the video age in analyzing golf swings. Most everybody was using the what I would call the classic type swing before around, say, 1980. You would see, you know, the hallmarks of the Austin swing, you might, or the classic swing, as you might see in a Billy Casper, Sam Snead, Bobby Jones. You'd see a swinging lower spine or a lateral movement in the hips in both directions. So definitely
right.
Very different than the way that the modern swing is being taught or conducted today, where the hips definitely stay more centered. We're swinging side to, so we're swinging our weight from side to side via our navel, which is the body's center of mass. So you'd see in all the, you know, all the classic swings before 1980, virtually everybody swung that way. They would post up on a more straight right knee, swing the pelvis over on top of the right heel while the head stayed very centered. So they're kind of, you're in effect swinging your spine in a pendulum underneath a steady head position, which we believe leads to a superior weight shift and more potential for hitting the ball far. Additionally, what Mike found was when you add this to a very specific setup, that this pivot would also control the plane of the golf swing so perfectly that it ends up being a swing of accuracy where power just comes by accident. So it's a swinging spine and a full release of the club head without impedance.
Right, and I think as most of the viewers, that anyone that's maybe a little bit older, such as myself, I mean, I'm going to be 50 next year. If we watch some of the older players, as I mentioned, Jack Nicklaus and probably even Johnny Miller would be a good example, is a lot of the older swings tend to have that more of that classic reverse C position, at the follow-through. And, as they found out as time went on, that even though it was very effective during that day, it resulted in a lot of back injuries and things like that. So the more modern swing tends to be where more finishing on the left leg in an upright position as opposed to that classic reverse C. And now, is that sort of similar to what you're talking about? Not the reverse C, but more finishing onto fully onto your left side?
Well, definitely finishing well onto the left side. We'd only be moving the spine in a range of motion that it was intended to move. So if you're making an over-exaggerated reverse C at the end, yeah, sure, that hyperextension of the spine could wear away and eventually cause an injury. I would argue, however, that the modern style of swing poses some other types of risks from some of the moves that are made and the positions that are attained, where the classic swing that Mike was teaching and I'm teaching, I would propose that it's actually safer on all the joints.
Right, and I know, well, we all know from some of the injuries that we've heard about in recent years with some of the more modern swings, Tiger's a perfect example of that. I mean, he's had, two knee operations now, and there's been many others that have had issues. I mean, you're always going to have, I guess, some issues like that, regardless of what. But, you know, as a tour pro, I think if you want to minimize it, you want to, be able to have a swing that's repeatable by all means, but at the same time, that's going to reduce those injuries. And it sounds like what you're proposing here with the Mike Austin swing pretty much does that very well. So
the purpose of the swing is to use all 12 skeletal joints plus the spine to maximize the amount of leverage, use all available amount of leverage in the human body to power the club around its arc, as well as control the plane and control the blade for accuracy as well. I think when it comes to injury, I don't think that you have to go any farther than Mike himself, or probably the closest person to Mike you probably could say would be Sam Snead. Both gentlemen swing very well and hitting the ball very far, well into their 70s. Mike was still driving the ball well over 300 yards in his late 70s before he had a stroke at age 79. He was still capable of swinging over 125 miles an hour at age 78. And in total, injury-free. And as Snead was, although a very smooth swinger and a great champion, he was a long hitter for his era, and again competed very successfully to a much older age, and then just kept playing on the original senior tour, you know, even into his 70s. That to me, just have to look to those two guys, and somebody like a Billy Casper, who also had,
right,
you know, a really similar swing. What Mike did was he took this classic swing and he made it precise. He eliminated any unnecessary movement and came up with the formula, came up with the, you know, every muscle and joint action that had to be made to recreate what he did. So you could scientifically recreate this. Anybody who has the set of instructions could recreate the swing.
And how can you, now I know you have a website that you promote in that, but if somebody wanted to learn a little bit more about the Mike Austin swing techniques and things like that, where's a good place for them to go? Obviously, you know, to get some lessons with somebody that's teaching specifically in that technique, but if they just want to learn more about it to see if that's a technique that they want to adopt for their swing or their game, where can they go to get some information about that?
Well, my website is a pretty good wealth of information on Mike and his technique. I do have written several hundred articles on, you know, breaking down the technique and the different aspects of it. My website is www.hititlonger.com.
Okay.
Other than that, there's really not a lot written about him, bits and pieces. You could go to YouTube and you can find a pretty decent collection of videos to see what it is we're talking about. It sounds, concepts I'm talking about by today's standards are now starting to sound a little bit radical, but when you watch the swing made by a skilled swinger, you're really pretty, you can just tell to your eye it looks smooth, it looks efficient, it looks effortless, it looks powerful, and it looks similar. It's just when you start to break it down to the components that it starts to sound like, wow, this guy wants to do what?
Well, the one thing that I've noticed about the more modern swings today, and this is something that, you know, I'm going to sort of ask in the question here, but first let me just throw this out there. You know, they always talk about, you know, an athletic swing and that sort of thing. And, you know, when you see a lot of the young tour players out there, obviously many of them are in great shape and things like that. And I wonder sometimes if it's maybe a little bit intimidating, particularly to some of the older players. So is maybe your technique that you're, you know, promoting something that's a little bit more, and I guess to use a more common or up-to-date term, but user-friendly, if you will, for the everyday golfer? Not saying that the top players or athletic players can't adopt it as well, but I just think that some of the more modern techniques today tend to favor those that are in really great shape. And as you know, the average golfer that's out there that's been playing for a number of years, you know, they don't have the benefit of the fitness trainers and things like that that some of these young tour pros have. So, you know, talk a little bit about that. Is this something that maybe is better suited for all levels of play?
Yeah, no, I would totally agree with that. The Mike Austin swing is way more user-friendly. In fact, if you go to any range on any day of the week and you find a child somewhere between the age of 5 and 8 years old, they will be making the exact Mike Austin swing without any coaching whatsoever. Only when they first – it's because the club is heavy and they're, you know, they're just trying to get it around, and they will release it because they have no other choice, and they will swing their spine back and forth. And it looks beautiful. And then it's only when they go to a coach, the coach starts telling them, well, you can't do that. Stop doing that. That's no good. And it's very natural. But a lot of good players, I was going to say in addition, a lot of good players that I teach, when I start to teach them components that will help fix their problems, the problem that they have, they're very relieved. They're saying, well, you mean I can take the club a little inside? Okay, because taking it back this other way that these other people have been showing me just feels so unnatural to me. And it takes them back to their teenage years or their heyday when they were playing other sports. It generally tends to make good players feel way more athletic and way less contrived than the modern swing was teaching them to feel. It just makes it feel really simple and natural when they do it this way.
Well, I think the key thing, too, is, you know, really the key word in golf is swing. And I think, and this is not to knock any, you know, teaching style or things like that, but I just find a lot of times that it comes out very regimented and very stiff would be a word I would use, because, it, you know, everything's sort of, you know, from point A to point B and slot, you know, this sort of thing. And people tend to have to, you know, to get into that perfect position every time. And our bodies are, everybody's body is different. You know, some maybe I'm a fairly long and lean type of frame. Somebody that's maybe a little short and stout is going to, you know, have different issues that, to deal with. So again, not everybody's swing is going to be the same. And I think if you try to go against the natural motion, if you will, your body, and have to think about it all the time, you're going to run into problems. And this sounds to me, what you're talking about is something that engages, especially if young kids are doing it at an early age without any instruction. It sounds to me like they're doing things that are more natural to the actual design of their body and not sort of trying to force the club or force their body into a position. Would I be right in assuming that?
I would totally agree with that. If you just go back to the base of that word, that key word that you brought up in swing, there's very, very few people that are teaching a swing these days. And here's the reason why. Because they're not teaching the club head to be released without impedance. You cannot swing on a swing set if you're dragging your feet in the sand. They're either delaying it or they're impeding it. They're getting in the way in it. They're restricting the release of the hands. If you let the club head go around the circle where it wants to go, it'll pretty much guide your body into the positions that it needs to go in. Just looking to swing the club head, snap it through with great velocity, and the club will be guided by gravity so perfectly, the ball will go in the same spot every time. It's really magical if you do just get out of the way of the club head, and especially when you get your body into a specific position, it's like magic. It's really neat.
Well, I remember, you know, as a young lad, I mean, I took up golf at a very early age, and to be honest, when I was quite young, really the only lessons that I ever really had was from my father. My father was an extremely good golfer, and, you know, one of the things that he always used to instill in me was to really swing the club, and this is, you know, before you had the one-piece takeaways and all of this sort of thing, and it was just really, I mean, as I said, I started the game at a very, very early age, and, you know, I found that when I just sort of took it back in a natural motion, it just felt effortless. And again, I'm not trying to suggest that some of the techniques not out there today are not efficient, because obviously we know that it works on tour. But again, I think in some cases where maybe the golfer is not as athletic, they may run into some problems. And I think really we need to get back to the basics. I think that's one of the things that there's just too much information coming in the golf industry right now. And something that I just want to touch about, which I know is going to go against a little bit, but we're going to talk about in a few minutes about hitting it longer. I mean, I think especially as men and as the male species, we want to hit that ball, you know, belt it a mile, and it's great. But I think a lot of the game has been focused solely on that end of it, and that may not always be in the best interest of the game as well. It's certainly fun to hit it a great distance, and we all want to be able to achieve that. But I think we also have to understand the basic fundamentals, because you're not really trying to, you know, hit it 300 plus yards with a sand wedge and, you know, different clubs like that. So it's certainly, I think, something to look at. But I think that really what we need to do is to focus on the basics and the fundamentals of learning to swing the club again, and not so much trying to, as I said, force it into a position. It's really about swinging the club, and that's what the game is about.
Oh, I totally agree. It's not just in the same vein as being able to swing the club with freedom, the club head with freedom, put the body in position to support this throw the club head without getting in its way. It ends up being the formula for accuracy as well when it's directed on plane with the right posture setup. It ends up being directed on plane, so it just the power in the Austin swing comes completely by accident. It's effortless power. It's when you're just trying to be accurate, and all of a sudden you look up and you've hit the ball further than anybody hits it on tour, and you're like, well, is that supposed to happen? You know. It's really crazy like that. It, you know, people, when they hear the name Mike Austin, of course, they you know, a lot of them may have heard that he was a long ball hitter. He's in the Guinness Book for the longest drive in a professional golf tournament at 515 yards. But the stories about him being accurate, for example, a 360-yard par 4, I think at Hillcrest Country Club, the first hole, he drove it on the putting surface 47 out of 50 times in an exhibition for a bunch of MGM executives and people like that.
Wow.
50 to 100 people there watching him. He drives it, not touches the green and rolls over, but actually hits it on the fly and sticks it on the green 47, 50 times. Now, ask any tour pro to try to hit a pitching wedge on a green 47 out of 50 times, and they will have difficulty.
Right.
Keeping it with just a pitching wedge, if you just take a normal size green, that would be kind of a challenge. And he did it with a driver from 360 yards. Everybody who ever played with him said he rarely left the sprinkler line. He was always down the middle. He almost never hit a bad shot. He'd occasionally miss hit once in a while, a little bit, but would never hit an awful shot, would really never leave the fairway. And this is at great distances.
Well, sure.
You know, there's some other accuracy stories, too, but that's really what I want to stress here about the swing is that you have such control of the plane and the blade that you can be accurate from chipping all the way out to wedges, 9-irons, 8-irons, and you can be really, really precise. It kind of, you know, using the entire system that I teach, it's kind of silly how accurate it ends up being. And like I said, the power comes by accident.
Right. Well, and one of the things, too, and we talked about this, just for those of you that are tuning in just a little bit after the beginning of the program, my special guest tonight is Steve Pratt from Westlake Village in California. And, of course, as he was just talking about the Mike Austin golf swing, we're just talking really about really swinging the club as opposed to what some people do out there hitting the ball. Really what you want to be able to do is be able to swing it effortlessly, and Mike Austin was somebody that managed to do that very, very well. And as you mentioned, Steve, just a few moments ago, that was still hitting a long way and accurate well into his 70s. And there's a lot of guys out there I know in their 20s and 30s that aren't doing that. And really that's something, too, that we've been talking about over the last few episodes here on Golf Talk Live. And just before I get into that, for those of you, again, that are tuning in a few minutes later after the beginning of the program, we're about 30 minutes into the program. You can call into the program if you want to speak to either Steve or myself, and the number is 646-716-4667. That number again is 646-716-4667, or you can email me at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/golftalklive blog. So make sure that you visit and like the page when you get there. But Steve, just to go back for a second here, I think I read something on some of the information that you had sent me a while back. I think you had referenced it, and quote me if I'm wrong, something about Mo Norman as well.
No, I'm not that familiar with Mo Norman. Not the huge similarity there between Austin and Norman. I would say that Mike Austin was like Mo Norman on steroids. He would probably hit every
right.
club. He was just as accurate as Mo Norman, but 50 to 100 yards
right.
longer with it. Every club.
Right. He wasn't a long hitter by any means, certainly by today's standards, but in the sense of accuracy, and that's what I was really driving at, was, you know, really what most people want is to be accurate. I mean, you can hit it, doesn't matter whether you hit it 200 yards, 250, or over 300 yards. If you're not hitting your shots accurate, it doesn't mount to really anything because, you know, if you're not in the fairway or in good position and you're in the rough or out in the woods, you're not going to score well. And as you said, if the distance comes as a byproduct of a good, solid, sound swing, then that's really a bonus. You know, the idea is you want to focus on the accuracy. So, what do you think were some of the key elements in that accuracy in his technique?
The key elements to accuracy in the Mike Austin swing are it's precision in the setup, precision in the angles and planes that the shoulders will be rocking back and through. That will help control the plane. And then, like I said before, a completely unimpeded release of the hands, a snap or whoosh of the club head, timed with the pivot, moving from a right foot balance to a left foot balance on over, will help square the blade perfectly every single time. You don't get that. It's very hard to swing the club on plane. You have to manipulate it on plane if you're not turning your hips and shoulders on plane with the ball. That's what Mike was doing. Rather than just trying to put his shaft on an imaginary plane line on a video screen, he was swinging hips and shoulders on plane with the ball back and then back into the ball and through again. That's what made it just automatic for him to be perfectly on plane and come out with a very straight path on every club.
You know, something that I think is interesting and something I've always done, you know, everybody talks about video and things like that, which is great. It's always nice to see yourself on the swing. But for those of you that have that are listening here tonight that have the ability to either video swing yourself, if you videotape, excuse me, yourself, you know, if you have a tripod and you can set something up or a buddy can do it for you, what I would really suggest is that you videotape your swing, but do it a little bit differently. Don't worry about hitting a ball on that. But actually do it with your eyes closed and just sort of swing the club and just get that on video. And I think you'll notice, and then also do it, you know, with your eyes open, hitting a ball and sort of doing it normally. And I think you'll notice a big difference because when you sort of take the visual part out of it and you just sort of swing naturally, as you said earlier, Steve, I think you'll notice that people will tend to swing it on a more natural, they're not thinking about it because they can't really see what they're doing, obviously, number one. But they're just sort of, you know, letting the arms and what move in a more natural swinging motion. And I think that for them to see what that looks like on a video would maybe help reinforce what you're talking about.
Yeah, it really comes down to the basic element of a swing, you know, like we were talking about before, that key word, swing. The key aspect there is, again, the snap and whirl of the wrists and forearms and elbows. Just the same kind of feeling as if you were snapping off a sidearm throw over to first base after picking up a bunt from kind of the submarine arm slot. It's that really loose, supple, whipping action that we're talking about. When you can master that, it's a matter of moving the torso into the correct position to support it. And that will bring the club in on such a perfect axis that into the ball that the ball will just go straight every single time, no matter how hard you try to whip the club through. You'll just make it go even straighter, kind of refresh, rather than having to sear the club or feel like you're guiding it through somehow or trying to hold angles or something like that. This is just a more easy way to just, you know, you're just flinging the club at the ball, basically.
Now, did he favor a more, you know, as far as ball position and things like that, did he favor any one position? I mean, obviously, there's been a lot of changes over the years. I mean, you know, earlier on, a lot of the players tended to play it more up towards the left heel for a lot of shots, especially those that, you know, that were playing here in the U.S. that wanted to, you know, play a higher launch angle and things like that and have the ball land a little bit softer. I mean, Nicholas used to play a lot of his shots pretty well almost off the left heel for everything, including his wedges. And does he sort of favor, did his methodology, if you will, favor any one type of ball position over another, or how did that compare?
Let me start with the caveat that, of course, in the real world, when we've got to shape shots and play wind, that we'll be moving it around to hit shots, to shot make. Being said, the Austin swing is definitely a little of a higher ball hitting swing than the average PGA Tour swing. As far as ball position goes, there's very specific ball position for every club, and it completely makes sense because it's the way the clubs are designed. For example, a 5-iron has 2 inches of lead built in by the manufacturers. Almost every set is like this. That means that in order for the leading edge of the club to make contact with the turf so that it can carve the correct divot, the handle has to be leaning forward 2 inches.
Right.
At the out ahead of the hosel at the moment of impact.
Right.
What we do in our swing, we're creating what I call like to call the zero line or the zero angle of attack or the point at which the club reaches the bottom of its swing arc. That point will be precisely in the left instep.
Okay.
So that's your zero line. You'll play every club precisely back as far as the lead angle. So, for example, the 5-iron, you'd play it the back of the ball exactly 2 inches behind that zero line. The handle of the club would be even with that zero line, right about your left thigh at the moment of impact, and it'll be leaning forward about 2 inches to give you the correct strike at the moment of impact. A pitching wedge, you'll play it back 5 inches from that point, as well as having a slightly narrower stance. That way you'll strike it with the handle leaning 5 inches forward without having to change your swing. We'll also start at address with the clubs all already preset in these lead positions so that we don't have to change the actual swing itself from club to club. See, there's nobody doing it like this on tour that I know of. Everybody on tour is starting with zero lead on all clubs at address. They're starting with the club straight down at address, no matter what club it is. You're going to have to find the correct lead somewhere in the middle of that swing, and it's going to be different with every club. So you're going to have to change your swing and the timing of your release in order to find the correct leading, the correct lead at impact. We've got it all built in, and we just have to swing, you know, just push button, and it's just the same swing for every club in the bag. On a driver will be played forward, and from what we know from TrackMan, as we'll get into in a little bit, we know that we want to hit up the ball with the driver for the most amount of distance. So we would actually play the ball forward of that zero line, actually closer to the big toe now. That way we can bottom out and then hit it slightly on the way up, which is very difficult to do if you've only got it positioned on the zero line, which would be a zero angle of attack and just sweeping it.
Right. Yeah, and you're not going to get that optimal launch.
Yeah, you won't get the optimal ball flight. You won't be able to be fitted into the optimal driver for you. You'll lose a lot of distance, and you won't sacrifice accuracy in either case. But you will lose some distance doing it that way. So yeah, the ball position will move around a little bit from club to club. If you want a good reference, you want to look up, you might want to Google Ben Hogan foot diagram or foot map. He was really close to what we're trying to do. And also what TrackMan is telling us that we should be doing is moving our feet in and out and close and apart like Hogan did. And there's a nice diagram that comes in his book, and it's readily available in an image online of what he did with his feet from club to club to club.
Right. Yeah, I'm familiar with that. And certainly Hogan, as we all know, that has followed golf for a number of years. And as I said, those of us that are a little bit older, watched him for years and have heard about how he played the game and just had a phenomenal, repetitive game. And considering what he went through with his injuries and things like that and how he was able to rebound, it is really a phenomenal story. But, yeah, Ben Hogan certainly had great insight into the game, and it certainly sounds like Mike Austin as well has done that. Let's change gears a little bit here, and I know some of the listeners want to get into the long drive. I know that you attended a number of RE/MAX World Long Drive Championships and other competitions as a player coach, and you've worked with quite a number, I believe, 40 RE/MAX qualifiers, including Austin Kincaid of McKinney, Texas, Danny Beckman of Fresno, and many, many others. First off, let's talk a little bit about that, just explain some of the things that you've done and how you've worked with it. And obviously yourself, as you mentioned, have hit the ball a long way, averaging over 330 yards in some of the tournaments that you played, and all-time long drive of 415 yards, which is putting most par fours to shame, really, when you think about it. But what do we need to do to understand? I mean, everybody wants to hit it. I mean, everybody's going and buying the latest, gadget out there thinking it's going to help their swing, but really it's not so much the equipment. It's in the fundamentals and in the swing itself. So let's sort of once and for all find out what it is that we as observers, if you will, out there, and also teachers, what is it that we need to do to be able to really hit that ball a long way? Because there's a lot of, you know, I won't say controversy, but a lot of misinformation.
Well, sure. You know, at the elite level of long drive play, the two guys that you mentioned that I've had multiple times on TrackMan, and, you know, at the elite level like this, we're talking about just crazy, crazy swing speeds that are necessary to compete in long drive at the top level. Danny Beckman registered 144 miles an hour club head speed last time I saw him. Austin Kincaid is getting consistently over 140 miles an hour and over 210 miles an hour ball speed as well.
Wow.
That's just crazy. And for the average guy, however, don't do anything to try to increase your club head speed at all until you've increased your efficiency, your driving
right.
distance efficiency. Let me give you a good example of that.
Okay.
Let me give you an example from the PGA Tour a couple of years ago. You had Charles Howell, third, who's a young, flexible guy, averaging 118 miles per hour club head speed for the whole year, 1 year, with an average driving distance of 289 yards statistically. Now, he was notoriously known for hitting down very steeply on the ball, so as much as 7, 8, 9 degrees with his driver. So, again, the key stats there, 118 miles per hour producing 289 average yards statistically. Then you get a guy like Mark Wilson, who's a much slower swinger, 106 miles an hour on average, and yet so efficient that he's driving 281 yards on average. He's only 8 yards behind, even though he's
right.
12 miles an hour slower. So even at the tour level, you see there's a large discrepancy in driving distance efficiency. Now imagine how it is at the average pro player level, even the club player level. You're talking about a potential increase of, say, 30 to 60 yards for almost every golfer out there without increasing club head speed a single miles an hour. So before
right.
you go out and say, well, Steve told me that I should be snapping really fast and trying to, you know, to hit real hard. What the average guy needs to do, let's take the below average guy. Those guys, to create their greatest amount of distance, the best thing to do is to swing within yourself and hit the ball square in the sweet spot. It just goes right,
right
back to that fundamental, the Julius Boro swing easy, hit hard fundamental, where just back off it a little bit, find a rhythm, find your own rhythm, stay within yourself at cruising speed, as Mike Austin used to call it, and just precisely strike the ball in the middle. Then you bump up to your average club player, let's say somebody between a 2 and an 8 handicap, a serious club player.
Right.
For them, the potential to increase, like I said, 30 to 60 yards,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, when we go into TrackMan, this is the type of thing you do on TrackMan. You can maximize the efficiency of your trajectory, your ball flight, your spin, your angle of attack, and then get fitted for a driver that fits you perfectly as you are making this optimum swing. You'll just pick out uncountable yards without. I've seen people pick up 50 yards in 1 hour of instruction on TrackMan while their speed actually went down a few miles an hour. They were and their effort level went way down. It's really crazy.
Well,
so go ahead.
Right, and I think you've hit it right on the nose. I think what a lot of people are under, and I've seen it many times, you know, going up to the range, just working on my own game, and I always like to watch other people. You know, obviously I teach as well, and you know, one of the things that I like to do is I'll observe how people are sort of managing their range time. And this is something we've also talked a number of times here on Golf Talk Live. But one of the things that I've noticed is when everybody pulls out their driver, you know, they're raising about 2.5 inches out of the heels of their shoes. And,
sure.
you know, they're just, you know, going with every ounce of gusto that they have to do it, and it's really not necessary. I remember, as I said earlier, when my father taught me the game at a very early age, you know, he said, son, one of the things that you need to do is, like you said a few moments ago, is to swing within yourself. And he said, okay, here. And he would tee up a ball, and I'd, you know, of course, pull out the driver, and he'd say, okay, I want you to give it everything you got. And, of course, you know, besides topping it and slicing it and doing everything else, it just wouldn't go anywhere. And then he'd do the same thing. He said, now this time, he says, I just want you to swing it just nice and slow, but within yourself. Keep control, make sure you're balanced and things like that. And I would do it, and man, it would just, boom, it would be gone. And then he would do the same thing. He'd say, okay, now I want you to, you know, really just get out there. And every time that I would just try to, you know, sort of murder the ball, I would get lousy results. But when I stayed within myself, you know, as you mentioned, and made good solid square contact with the ball, I mean, as soon as it hit that club face, boom, it was gone, and it was effortless.
Right. The power is in the technique. The power is not in the effort for the average guy. Now, once you've gone beyond that, you know, you're a lower handicap, you've mastered, you're in balance every time you swing, you've mastered a little bit of rhythm and technique, and it starts to become ball flight, you know, trajectory, spin, path and club face, all the things that TrackMan, as we'll get into in a bit, is reading, and you're just eking out every last ounce of efficiency out of the speed that you presently have. It's not easy to build club head speed, especially physiologically. Some people can increase club head speed quite a great deal through technique, and you know,
right.
That's what I'm offering. My cost of swing usually pick up quite a deal of club head speed when they start to use it. But, you know, to try to go to the gym and work out and do all kinds of stuff, that's the slow way. That's the last way. That's the guys at the elite level. If they're going to compete for a world title, that's mandatory for them because they have to have that last advantage. But for most everybody else, you know, hitting the gym takes so much commitment to get any kind of noticeable gain in club head speed. You can get it so much easier than that. Again, proper club fitting, good solid contact, good technique that helps maximize club head speed for minimum amount of effort. Those things are what I recommend that everybody covers first. Check those off first.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then if you find, hey, I want to squeeze a little bit more out, I've looked at my technique, my driver's, my spin's perfect, everything's perfect, then you want to explore a few simple exercises that might help increase your power in the muscles and joints.
Well, and also too, I think flexibility has a lot to do with it. I mean, you can have a lot of brute strength, but it's not going to get the ball out any further. I mean, you might hit it out further than somebody else if you're in good physical shape, but flexibility has a lot too, because you know your muscles are all sort of intertwined and tied together and connected. And if you're working with tight muscles all the time and there's no, you know, sort of, as I call it, smoothness with the muscle, meaning that they're well stretched and warmed up and things like that, and they're constantly tight, and especially if you're somebody that hits the gym all the time and you're bulked up, a lot of times that's going to make it a little bit cumbersome to be effective. But I agree with what you said with the equipment, and that's something that I've always stressed as well. You know, get fitted with the right equipment. And don't just go out and buy the best and the biggest and best driver that you think is out in the market and expect that you're going to get results. I mean, you might get a few extra yards, but it's really going to be minimal, because if you're not making good solid contact with the ball and your technique is not solid, you know, this extra 20, 30 yards that the manufacturers talk about, it's just not going to happen. Because if you might improve a little bit with accuracy because the technology today allows that to happen. But the truth of the matter is, if you're not making solid contact with the ball, I don't care what drive you're playing with, you're not going to see the results that you think you're going to see.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. If you're playing a 20-year-old driver, then, yeah, definitely.
Well, sure.
Totally worth it.
Don't get me wrong.
But as far as buying next year's
I'm
driver.
I'm all for it. And, you know, even though on the programs.
Go ahead.
No. All I was going to say was that, you know, there's nothing wrong with the technology, and I've mentioned this on the programs, that sometimes I think that they're pushing so much, especially with the driver of the technology, and the expectation that the average golfer is getting is unrealistic, because they're not really understanding the technique, as you said, and they're getting out there thinking, okay, this, you know, $300-$400 driver that I've just purchased is going to get me those extra 20-30 yards, or this gizmo or gadget that I've just bought offline. And they get out there and it doesn't do anything. And the next thing you know, it's collecting dust. And the next year, another product comes out. Well, I'm going to get that one now. And really, it boils down to if the fundamentals are sound and if the technique is sound, they're going to get that extra distance. And of course, you know, as you mentioned just a moment ago, if you're playing with a 20-year-old driver as opposed to what's out there today, obviously you're going to see some difference. But, you know, if you bought a driver last year and you're buying today's technology, you know, next week, but the fundamentals are the same, then you're not going to see a difference because the technology is not that, you know what I mean? It's not that great.
Yeah, in that case, you'd see very little difference in your performance. Yes, the technology, you know, they're just geniuses at marketing. They're just fantastic at marketing.
Sure.
Get everybody to think that you are going to, you know, we'd be all be hitting 400 yards by now if we picked up 15 yards every year for the last 10 years. But, you know, the reality is you just got to find, and they don't do that great of a job at all the different various golf supermarkets and what have you. They might have you hit into a net a couple times. They might ask you your swing speed or something like that, and then they hand you a club. Oh, here's your 9.5 stiff. What they didn't know is that you hit 6 degrees down on the ball, and you end up launching it, and you have a fast, kind of a fast, violent tempo at the top of your swing, and you kind of end up launching it at about 4 degrees with about 5,000 RPMs of spin and maybe going 230 yards with your 108-mile-an-hour club head speed, and you're only going 230 yards.
Right.
They need a more complete picture. This is, again, where TrackMan comes into play. You've got to get a more complete picture of how you deliver a driver into the ball before you can get a really good fitting. The other thing I would submit is that the major companies, you don't really know what you're going to get. Sure, a club might be marked 9.5 stiff, but is it really 0.5? You'll find that the tolerances will be plus or minus a degree. You'll find that the way that the club head is weighted, where the center of mass is, will totally change the way that the trajectory plays. And then the shaft, how stiff is stiff? What company is it stiff? Stiff? Is it a stiff Fujikura? Is it a stiff UST? What is the model number? You know, the model name. That'll even vary.
Well, exactly. All manufacturers, there's always going to, it's just like anything, it's in any industry, there's always going to be variance. I mean, they're going to be within reason, within plus or minus a little bit. But again, what might be stiff for one company might not be for another, or might not be as stiff. And that's where the fitting comes in. Since you've mentioned it several times, let's work into talking and how this all ties in with TrackMan and how it can be used and things like that, both not only from the players' advantage, but also from the teaching professionals' advantage. But just quickly, Steve, if I can have a moment, I just want to quickly remind the listeners in here that my guest this week is Steve Pratt, a teaching professional, studied the Mike Austin golf swing. And we're talking here about a number of things, not only Mike Austin golf swing, but talking about long drive champions and also the benefits of using TrackMan. And also, just very quickly, Steve, you're going to be, I believe this Saturday, you're going to be the Southern California Long Drive Championship with TrackMan at the Woods Valley Golf Club, which is near San Diego, correct?
That's right. It's inland from San Diego a bit. Beautiful site. Got a great range there to hit on, and blessed with the presence of at least two former world champions that day so far that we know are going to show up. It'll be a great event. Great long drive. If you're anywhere in the area, you want to come out, you want to just see the TrackMan in action, see long drivers in action, see how they do things, see what kind of equipment they use, what kind of distances they're going. You know, you should definitely come on out. I might even be able to squeeze you in for a little time on the TrackMan after the event's over.
Very good. Very good. We'll plug that again at the end of the show just to remind the listeners in. Okay, let's talk about the TrackMan. Let's first off, let's talk about the advantages, if you will, that a teaching professional can gain by using that particular piece of equipment.
Well, sure. It's you know, we all know how expensive these units are, but the insights that give you that watching a swing or watching a swing on video, like on, even if it's a really good camera and an analysis system and everything, it just doesn't give you the truth. It just doesn't give you that precise moment of impact and delivery into the ball. You just can't measure it. So it's very hard to tell very small differences. I'll give you an example for a second. So we've all heard about the term gear effect before. I don't think, unless you've been on TrackMan, you understand how profound it is, how even a dimple miss, heel or toe, will create, several degree change in club face as the club goes through the ball. So I'll give you an example. If you were to see a ball as a teacher, if you were to see a ball start to the left of the center line and then slice back to the right of the center line, the first thing you might think was, well, the player might have come over the top a little bit and swung from the outside in. And that's what any teacher would think at first. I can show you, however, many incidences on TrackMan where that shot can be created from a well inside out path and a closed club face.
Right.
It's just a matter of that ball got hit off center in the heel, club face got flipped over, made the ball start left of center line, and then it sliced back again. So your eye can get fooled. Even though the shot may have sounded pretty solid, if you've got a really good ear, it just had to be a dimple or two towards the heel, and it will affect the initial launch direction and the curvature of the shot. So you need to get the full picture. This, you know, the TrackMan will enable you to precisely locate where on the club face the student struck the ball. Most don't know where they struck it on the ball, and even when they do, they think they do, you can even show them more precisely where they struck it and why a shot behaved like it did. That's just one dimension to so many dimensions of TrackMan that are giving us insight into, again, the ball flight and the way that you delivered the club into the ball.
Right, and that information, too. I mean, you know, obviously, when you're, you know, as a student, that information is valuable as well because it gives you a truer insight. And obviously you want somebody that's well-trained on the apparatus that's going to be able to read things and decipher it well for you now, because the average person doesn't understand all of that. But the thing that go ahead, sorry.
Let me give you a more basic, simple idea that more people maybe listening or to teach their students can grasp a little easier if they don't want to get into that type of advanced detail. Just think of just basically path and face. You've got a student who slices. You can show them the angle of the face of their club at impact. You can show them how it relates to the reason that they're slicing. And then let's say that their club face measured 12 degrees open at the moment of impact, and you're working with them, and they you can tell they're getting it, but let's say they slice another one out there, but you say, look, you weren't 12 degrees open that time, you were 7 degrees open that time. They'll be hanging their head, feeling really disappointed that they had hit another slice, but you'll be able to give them feedback saying, no, you're getting better. Your path is getting straight. Your face is getting close straight. We're almost there.
Yeah, you're getting positive feedback from the equipment, and that's really what you want. You're right, because, as you said, you know, when a lot of people are going strictly visual and, you know, they're slicing the ball and it might be, 5, 10, 15 yards that the ball sliced, you know, depending on how they've hit it. Maybe the next one's not as much, but in their mind they're seeing a slice, and, you know, darn, I've sliced that ball again. But like as you said, there could be a 4, 5, 6 degree difference in the club face angle, which is a lot. It's a positive to be able to reinforce them. So you're right. You want to be able to show the student and say, look, yeah, okay, you're still slicing a little bit, but you're getting better. You're moving in the right direction. And then eventually, you know, it might be only 1 or 2 degrees open. And that's going to make them feel good. They're going to say, okay, how did that feel? Because it's still a feel game to a certain degree. I mean, you can have all the technology and equipment, but if now you have the technology to support. I mean, for years and years, it was always, you know, people talked about muscle memory and things like that. And that's great for somebody that has been playing for a long time. The tour pros, many of them for years, have done that, played on feel. And somebody at that high caliber level can get away with that. But the average guy that's playing in a weekend with his buddies or in an occasional corporate outing and things like that, they don't have that type of skill to be able to feel that. But if they can get some positive feedback with something like TrackMan, now they can get an idea of, they can say, okay, when I hit it and it was maybe only a degree or two, how did that feel to me?
Yes.
And do you understand what I'm saying? And what ends up happening is now they can relate it, and they're not only seeing it visually, but they're getting some other feedback. So when they're using that in their practice sessions, you know, with their instructors and things like that, they're able to get instant feedback, not just visually from the ball flight, but also from the numbers and that the coach is feeding back to them.
Well, heck, they can completely blow a shot altogether and still get good feedback. You might take a guy who's been slicing the ball for 40 years. He's never hit a hook in his life. He's always slicing it. His friends tease him about it. And he might get up there, and usually what happens when I take someone who is swinging in that slice pattern and get them to swing more correctly, the first thing that they'll do is hit a ground ball to shortstop. They'll just top it off to the left. And, of course, the first thing they're thinking is, oh, that was awful. I'm getting worse. And then you tell them, this is the first time in your life that you swung through with the club square.
Right.
You swung a little from the inside, and you squared up the face. Yeah, I know you dribbled it off to the left, but this is a new motion for you. This is like learning how to swing left-handed or something. This is not going to take 5 seconds to fix. Something that you've been doing for 40 years.
Right, and here's something too that I think is really important, and I've mentioned this on the program before. Every player is all obviously different. I'll give you an example, and I'll use myself as an example, and some of you that are listening here and have listened to me before. I'm a visual person, and for me, if I see what's going on, whether it be, you know, through TrackMan or what have you, then I'm able to sort of formulate in my head. And one of the things that makes it great with equipment like that is if somebody's just telling me, well, this is what you're doing, if I can't see it in my mind or I can't see it physically and understand it, then it makes it harder for me to sort of receive that information. And it's just the way I am. And now some people can do that. Some people can, you know, you can give them all the facts and figures. The beauty of TrackMan is you're getting both, because you're getting not only physical feedback, you can see the club face angle and things like that, but you're also getting some of the numbers as well that go with it. And for somebody that's visual like me, it's a fantastic tool to have, to be able to use and to be able to teach with, because it makes it easier to express to the students what it is I'm talking about, as opposed to just me rambling off, well, you're 2 degrees or you're 4 degrees or this, that, and the other. If somebody happens to be like me that's more of a visual person, if I can't show them what it is I'm talking about, then they're not going to receive it that well, and it's going to be hard for them to learn.
Yeah, two comments on that. That's exactly right. First, you've got to tailor the information. As with any good lesson, you've got to tailor the information that you give them to the level and the style of the learner. Somebody who's an average golfer with a slice, let's say, as many are, mm-hmm. I'm just going to tell them, I might just eliminate all the other boxes on the screen and just have path and face on the screen. And I'll say, look, we've got to get this face closer to zero, and we've got to get this path closer to zero, and this is where you are now. Let's just eliminate it to this. But I'll just say, okay, then I'll go and I'll show them the motions that they need to make in order to control the face and the path. And I'll say, this is what controls the path. This is what controls the face. And then I might say, you know, just like making the perfect soup or the perfect stew, I'll say, okay, you need a little bit more salt, a little bit more pepper.
Right.
Okay, do this a little bit more. Do that a little bit more. Oh, okay, see, we're getting closer to zero now. Now you see how you just have to do it a little bit more, maybe a little sooner, and you'll have it. But to obsess over the numbers is something you only do. Even some tour pros can't even handle obsessing with over numbers. They don't want to. They want to be, you said, more in the field
right.
category.
Right. And that's something that you know, that's something that can be, and I want to ask that question actually now, is what is something that, especially as a teacher professional, that we have to be careful about using, and I think that's probably a good thing, is bombarding the student with a bunch of numbers and things like that. But is that something that we really have to be careful about when using this equipment, is not getting too technical with it?
Yeah, from what I understand, there's actually not that many operators who really grasp everything that's going on the screen. You know, there's a good 2 or 3 dozen different boxes that you can light up on the screen and get measurements from. And there's also a very specific way that a lot of them interact with each other,
mm-hmm.
which is really interesting. So if you do bombard people, yeah, it's not just a great way to bombard a beginner. They'll get very intimidated by it. But you could
right.
bombard somebody like a tour pro as well with way too many thoughts in their head about trying to fix this and that. And it's better to just kind of isolate. Actually, in some cases, I will just delete the rest of the information off the screen. And, hey, let's just focus on path today. You're swinging a little too far from the inside. We're getting a push and hook type pattern out on the course. Let's just work on path and getting it a little bit more round to straight today. And that will just be
right.
the focus of our lesson today. And then you just have one number to throw at them. With combined with a feel, you take them through, this is what it may feel like to you to
mm-hmm.
bring the club round on a little straighter path. This is personal to you. Somebody who's swinging the other way would feel something completely different if they were trying to swing closer to zero. So you're trying to really jump into their head, figure out some trigger words, some keywords from the information they give you, and you're really trying to give them a trigger. What is it going to feel like to them? And then they eventually come up with their own as they practice, as they find the secrets in the dirt, as Hogan used to say.
Right. And that's something that I've always found, you know, not only with myself, but when teaching. And again, it goes back to when my dad would take me out. I mean, I, you know, had a few lessons here and there over the years, but primarily a lot of it was initially was taught from my father. And as I said in the beginning, he was a very good golfer, and he just had a lot of insight and sort of believed in a lot of the mythology that you're talking about here tonight here on Golf Talk Live. And you know, one of the things that you know I always remember him saying was, you know, don't overthink the swing. And that's something that I think a lot of even the tour players do still to this day. I think there's some guys out there, and I think that's what really kind of cripples them, is they get too mechanical, too methodical in their thinking. And, you know, I mean, obviously to get to that level, and I'm sure you understand, you've played on a number of the different tours and things like that, and obviously some competition, so you understand that sort of that thing can happen. But I think what a lot of them end up doing is they get so focused on the mechanics of the swing, and as we talked about earlier, getting things into, you know, position A, B, and so on, that when they get out there, they're just bombarded with so many different swing thoughts that it becomes overwhelming. And I think the better players, particularly on the tour, that have able to manage that part of their game, they're able to filter all of that out and focus on what they need to focus on. But the less experienced, even the tour players, the ones that are less experienced out there, you can almost see it, especially when they get into the heat of the competition, you know, Saturday or into Sunday, they'll suddenly start to collapse. And you can just tell what's going on just by watching them.
Yeah, I get the impression from watching on TV that too many guys have just way too many mechanical thoughts running through their heads these days. They've got, you know, their swing gurus with the latest
right.
Style of swing, and it's not natural to the way they grew up playing. It's like a completely different swing, and it would take years to master it. As well as, you know, I don't know, Tiger Woods is never going to master his current swing as well as he mastered
no.
the swing as a kid.
Right.
I, in my opinion, worked great.
well, if you look at this one, you know, and just to stop you for a real quick second, Steve, that's a very, that's an excellent point, because if you go back to his junior career and look at even at that age, that early age, how he dominated for quite some time. And then when he came out on the tour, he was still really playing with that swing. Now, you know, some people say, well, he wasn't. This is my opinion, what I think ends up happening. And I know that they're not out there while they're playing and they're not listening to it. But I think there's too many voices in their head. And whether it be, you know, some of the gurus out there, like you say, that are talking to the coaches and things like that. And I'm not knocking anybody that's worked with Tiger, but I think what happens is they hear too much about, well, you know, Tiger's not that accurate off the tee, and he's blown another one out off the fairway and into the rough. But one of the great things about Tiger's game was even when his tee shots were a little askew and not down the middle of the fairway, he was able to recover very well. And I think what happens with a lot of these guys is they keep trying to reinvent the wheel. You know, maybe they have a little bit of a slow patch or something, or you know, they're not playing as well as they did for a few weeks, and suddenly they start reinventing the wheel, and ultimately they end up rebuilding their swings. And you're right. I think if Tiger had stuck with what he had as a junior golfer and just kept it going, you know, who knows what things would be like. And I think that, you know, I'm not knocking away from his career. I mean, he's been phenomenal, but I just think he's made so many changes, it just seems like his game's gotten worse.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We didn't have TrackMan back then. I think if he did, if he was on TrackMan back in 2000, I think the evidence on TrackMan would have showed that his swing was actually very healthy and really couldn't have been improved on all that much, although we didn't. So he had video evidence, which in this case, in many cases, I think video evidence of and playing and everything like that, it can really lie, because you don't have the complete delivery picture that TrackMan's giving you. So it could look good on video, or it could look bad on video. I'm sure everybody told him, you know, well, you're way underneath the playing line when you hit your driver.
Right.
Only because he was hitting way up on the ball with his driver back then. So you have to swing out to the right and underneath the swing plane in order to create a zero-degree path when you're hitting up on the ball. But this wasn't really available as a precise measurement right now. I would echo the sentiments that Brandel Chamblee has put forward. He's been, you know, raised eyebrows on Tiger's direction in the last few years. But what I agree with, and he said, is that, you know, at what risk?
Yeah.
You know, at what risk are you going to go and do all this for? There's such a great risk. Boy, you better be awfully careful in what direction that you're going in here, because you were so good before. And that's what you'd want to tell anybody getting serious about golf is, you know, make sure that you don't stray too far off your original path of swinging, methodology of swinging. Because you don't learn it like you did when you were 13. Or 12,
exactly.
And you don't learn it.
And let me give you a really a perfect example. I mean, there's been many examples over the years, but one that comes to mind with me is Nick Faldo. And I remember in the earlier, prior to the mid '80s, when Nick was playing first out on tour, you know, they used to joke around, especially over in the European tour, and that they used to call him El Faldo because he just couldn't seem to close it out. And he just didn't have, I mean, he had an okay swing, but it was really nothing great. Now, he went out there and he, you know, grinded out and rebuilt his swing, and it ended up being a fantastic, I mean, very mechanical, but it was a fantastic swing. And he started to really dominate a lot of tournaments for a long time, certainly not to the degree that Tiger's doing or had been doing there for a while. But he certainly, I mean, was very a prominent figure in the major tournaments. I mean, he won the Masters, you know, a number of times, and the British Open a number of times as well. But he was just a sort of a force to be reckoned with. And what the interesting thing about Nick was he didn't stop there. It wasn't good enough. And it got to a point where he just got so obsessed with, and this is what I think the trap that some of these guys get into that are very mechanical and very technical is they don't know when to quit. And the truth of the matter is, you know, Steve, is you will never, ever, I don't care who you are, I don't care what methodology, you're never going to 100% master the golf swing. Now, there's a lot of great things, but it's a continual learning experience, because as you grow older, your body changes, there's adjustments that need to be made and things like that, and you're always in a learning phase of your golf game, if you will. And I think that there's nothing wrong with learning new things, but I think if you start getting too technical and bombard yourself with all of these different things, it can be a hindrance. And I think that really happened with Nick, because all of a sudden his game, and I mean, obviously age factored into it a little bit, but he got so technical with his game that he started to revert back to his older play, where it just was not consistent any longer. He wasn't happy with the way he was playing. You know, confidence goes down, so on and so forth. And I think that's one of the things that a lot of the guys have to be careful of, you know, when they're playing, is getting, you know, bombarding themselves with messages.
I think Nick Faldo is a really good example, and we can draw him back to TrackMan as well. You know, it took him years to master that swing. It didn't come night. It took him grinding, and he had to want it. I mean, he practiced like a number one player would want it. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody trying to get to number one would practice. He grinded it out for several years before he started to get some really good results out of that swing. Interestingly, when he got on TrackMan for the first time, and he discovered that his driver swing was 5 degrees down angle of attack, and then the TrackMan guy started telling him how far he would hit it at that speed if he was up 5 degrees. And he started doing it right there. He started trying to say, okay, well, I guess I have to get more like this. And he intuitively knew kind of how he would have to do it. But interestingly,
right.
how when he picked up 20 yards in 5 minutes and was hitting the ball longer than he ever had done in his entire life on 15 minutes on TrackMan, just from moving his angle of attack from -5 to zero, which is about all you
right.
can expect to get in the first few sessions. His next response was, there's no telling how many majors I would have won because if I was able to drive the ball this far. He was always very distance challenged for such a big, tall guy and strong fit. I mean, he's a physical presence when you see him in person up close.
Mm-hmm.
He's not small, scrawny guy. He's a big, strong
no.
guy. And the distance that he was hitting was not very impressive. He was straight and he was consistent. But, you can poo-poo distance, but he was the first guy to say, God, I would have won way more tournaments if I was able to hit drives out this far. That would have been amazing. I wish this TrackMan thing had been out, you know, a long time ago.
Right, and that certainly, you know, has been, an advantage for a lot of, especially some of the younger players that came up there, you know, after him. The distance was something that started to come out and started to become a factor. And obviously, Tiger in his earlier profession was very, very long for really not being. He was very long and sort of lanky, but not really being an overly to the strength that you know when you see him. At the height of his, what I consider the height in the early 2000s, you know, when he was really physically fit, I mean, he was literally a machine. He was like Nick. I mean, very, very solid. I mean, Nick wasn't quite as physically developed, but Nick was very solid in his own right. But when you look at the earlier times in 97 when Tiger first came out, I mean, a good stiff wind would blow him over. And
sure.
But, you know, he worked on that, but he had a good fluid swing and he had something that worked. And for some reason, I don't know why, but, you know, probably what you had said earlier is he had too many people, through video and things like that, that were trying to make adjustments and saying, well, you're coming too far in this way or over this way. And I think sometimes that they need to leave well enough alone. But we're getting here sort of towards the end. We actually went a little over what we originally had slated here. And I certainly enjoyed, learning a little bit. And I hope that the listeners have as well. But let's just to sort of wrap things up, Steve, tell them again, number one, where they can go and learn a little bit more about the Mic Off. Where can they get in touch with you?
Well, they can get in touch with me. My email is steve@hititlonger.com. You can just find the contact form by going to the site as well. Hititlonger.com. Got a YouTube channel that you can see lots of analysis and things, other fun things that I've done at In Motion 70, the channel over at YouTube. I'm also writing articles for golfworks.com, writing articles on how to get the most distance out of your game. You can check those out. I write about every couple weeks or so.
Okay. And the actual, for those listening, the actual website that you can go and sort of check a little bit about, as Steve had said earlier, is www.hititlonger.com. That's the website that you can find more information about the Mike Austin Golf Swing. And as we also mentioned a few moments ago, Steve is going to be this Saturday, will be at the Southern California Long Drive Championship with Trackman. At the Woods Valley Golf Club, which is near, just outside, I think you said, San Diego.
Yeah, inland San Diego. I don't know if it's considered San Diego or not, but it's nearby, just inland, near, you know, the 15 freeway.
Okay, so if you want to, those of you that are in the area that want to go by and watch some of the a couple of the top guys, possibly more, as you said, that more coming online. Want to learn how to hit it longer, and you said you might even be able to squeeze a few of them into some sessions with TrackMan just to let them to see how the technology works and that. And for those that you have been tuning in this evening, I want to thank you. As I said, it never seems to be enough time to talk golf on these programs. It just seems to, you know, you could be talking forever. But, you know, I certainly appreciate you, Steve, coming on the program this evening, and I hope that you'll come back and we can talk some more. As I have extended to all of my guests, I hope that you will come back. I would love to continue the conversation and keep it going. But for those of you that, as Steve said, that you want to get in touch with him, you can do that at steve@hititlonger.com. Is that correct?
Yes, steve@hititlonger.com. Last thing, you can also, I've got a couple of ebooks on Amazon.com, 50 Tips for Hitting Your Longest Drives Ever, and 50 Tips for Hitting Your Longest Drives Straight. Is the sequel to that one. You can find those over at Amazon.com.
Amazon.com. Steve, I want to thank you for coming on the program. I appreciate that. And we've been talking a little bit with Steve Pratt this evening about not only the long drive, some of the long drive champions, and obviously how to use TrackMan a little bit, just to familiarize those of you that are not familiar with how that particular equipment works. And obviously, foremost is the Mike Austin Golf Swing. And as I said, if you want to learn a little bit more about that, you can visit Steve's website at www.hititlonger.com. Steve, I appreciate it again one last time for you coming on the program. I know that everybody's busy. We've got lots of things to do, and I appreciate you taking this time and coming on this evening.
Hey, Ted, it was my pleasure. I'll come back anytime.
I appreciate it. You take care. Have a great weekend, and I'll be in touch with you soon, and we'll set something up. You can come back on again.
All right, terrific. Thanks a lot for having me.
You're very welcome, Steve. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay, just to wrap quickly the last moment or two, just to remind everybody that next week, July 25th, my guest that evening is going to be Randy Friedman, and she is a speaker and mind coach, also a golf pro at Golf Mind Power LLC. She's also the author of a book in 2008 called Your Inner Swing. And she's going to be coming on the program to talk a little bit about the mental side of golf, which, as we know, is just as important as the physical side. In some cases, a lot of people theorize that the mental side is even more so important than the physical side. So she's going to be coming on next week. And then we're going to be moving into the month of August. And just to quickly give you some of the guests, Meredith Kirk, owner of Meredith Kirk Golf, and she's an LPGA member and a USGTF Level 3 certified teaching professional. She's going to be coming on the 1st of August. And on the 11th of August is Barry Goldstein, who I've mentioned several times on the program. He's going to be coming on here. He was listed as a top 25 golf teacher by Golf Tips Magazine, and he lives in the Coral Springs, Florida. And he's also the proud father of, and teacher and caddy of his daughter, a lovely daughter, Carly Rae Goldstein, who is a world and national champion, very prominent junior golfers. One, as I've mentioned, she's probably over the 100 mark now, but certainly pushing that. I think last count was 99 tournaments that she's won in her junior career, and she's preparing this summer. She's relaxing a little bit, still playing some golf, but getting ready for her first term, if you will, at LSU this fall, where she'll be playing with the golf team there. And I'm sure she's going to bring a lot of experience there. On August the 15th is Clint Wright, PGA teaching professional and owner of R3 Golf Academy. He's up in Pendleton, South Carolina. We're going to bring him on and talk a little bit of golf, of course. And got some other great people coming up in the weeks and months ahead. For those of you that are in the teaching professional, and if you want to come on the program or interested, you can email me directly at ted golftalklive@gmail.com. And you can also visit the Facebook page and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/golftalkliveblog. Really appreciate it if you do that. Make sure that it's facebook.com/golftalkliveblog. And we certainly love it if you would throw some likes our way. Again, I want to thank for those of you that are just tuning in at the latter moments. Our special guest tonight was Steve Pratt, the teaching professional who studied the Mike Austin golf swing, who we talked about this evening, and also is very involved with the long drive aspect of the game, and also talked a bit about TrackMan. He's currently out in the Westlake Village area in California. And this Saturday, he's going to be at the Southern California Long Drive Championship, which is out in just near San Diego. So hopefully you will visit him there. And you can check out his website at www.hititlonger.com. I want to thank everybody. I'm live here from San Antonio, Texas, and I'll be heading home tomorrow back to Panama City Beach, Florida. I want to thank you for tuning in this evening. We will talk to you next Thursday here on Golf Talk Live at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. Have a great rest of the evening, everybody, and a great weekend, and we will talk to you next Thursday. God bless and have a great evening.